From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Democratic National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington. In the next hour, we'll hear tonight's keynote address from an up-and-coming Democrat, Julian Castro. He's 37 years old and the mayor of San Antonio. After him, the final act of the night, First Lady Michelle Obama. At the podium in Charlotte now, Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley. He is the chair of the Democratic Governors Association.
Facts are facts. No president since Franklin Delano Roosevelt in the Great Depression inherited a worse economy, bigger job losses, or deeper problems from his predecessor. But President Obama is moving America forward, not back. And yet, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan now say they want to take America back. And we have to ask, back to what? Back to the failed policies that drove us into this deep recession? Back to the days of record job losses? Back to the days when insurance companies called being a woman a pre-existing condition? No, thank you. I don't want to go back. Do you? Instead of a balanced, achievable plan to create jobs and reduce the deficit, Mitt Romney says, puts forward a plan that would cut taxes for millionaires while raising them on the middle class. Instead of improving public safety and public education like President Obama, Mitt Romney says we need less firefighters, teachers, and police. Instead of safeguarding our seniors, Romney and Ryan would end the guarantee of Medicare and replace it with a voucher in order to get bigger tax breaks to billionaires. Instead of investing in America, they hide their money in Swiss bank accounts and ship our jobs to China. Swiss bank accounts never built an American bridge. Swiss bank accounts never put cops on the streets or teachers in our classrooms. Swiss bank accounts never created American jobs. Governor Romney, just because you bank against the United States of America doesn't mean the rest of us are willing to sell her out. We are Americans. We must act like Americans. We must move forward, not back. My parents, Tom and Barbara O'Malley, like so many of yours, were part of that great generation that won the Second World War. Dad flew 33 missions over Japan in a B-24 Liberator. He was able to go to college only because of the GI Bill. Our parents taught us to love God, love our family, and love our country. Their own grandparents were immigrants. Their first language may not have been English, but the hopes and dreams they had for their children were purely American. You see, there is a powerful truth at the heart of the American dream. The stronger we make our country, the more she gives back to us, to our children, and our grandchildren. Our parents and grandparents understood this truth deeply. They believed, as we do, that to create jobs, a modern economy requires modern investments, educating, innovating, and rebuilding for our children's future, building an economy to last from the middle class up, not from the billionaires down. Yes, we live in changing times. The question is,
and we've been listening to Maryland Governor Martin O'Malley speak at the podium in Charlotte. He is the chair of the Democratic Governors Association. We're joined by our analyst now, Ron Elving. Martin O'Malley's been in the news a lot in the past few days. He told CBS's Face the Nation Sunday the country was not better off than 4 years ago and has been trying to backpedal since then.
He said in his own defense that he was really trying to say that the job losses and deficits that we've been facing since that time were a consequence of the crisis that came about because of Bush administration policies, which is a familiar formulation from the Democratic Party and the Obama administration. And he apparently just either didn't get the talking points quite right or was spinning the ball a little differently by saying we weren't better off yet because the hole was so deep. Most all the rest of the Democrats have been saying, and of course Martin Malley's gotten on the program, that we are better off than we were 4 whole years ago. If you go back to that whole crisis and you look at how bad things got as a consequence, then we are in some sense better off since then. It's a bit of a linguistic problem. It's a little bit of a pretzel for them to be in. They would certainly rather be able to say just simply, yeah, sure, everyone can see we're better off. Why did you ask?
Matt Continetti.
I'm spotting a real tension in some of these speeches. You know, Deval Patrick says we should turn to each other, not on each other. And yet that's littered throughout these speeches. We have these very harsh negative attacks on Mitt Romney. You know, Ted Strickland basically accused Romney of lacking economic patriotism. His words. Martin O'Malley on the podium just said, you know, Romney banks against the United States of America, sells her out. Nancy Keenan of NARAL said, you know, that Romney would overturn Roe v. Wade. Apparently, he's also running for the Supreme Court, too. I think the tone of the message is something that will be rescued by Michelle Obama, at least tonight. But whether they can rescue it the other two nights remains to be seen.
E.J. Dionne, we're also hearing Democrats make the case that despite the deficit, you know, that they're lauding President Obama for keeping up investment in certain areas like education. You know, but is that going to get them labeled as big spenders?
I think that they're not talking in terms that sound like spending. It's that old argument, is it an expenditure or an investment? What really strikes me as different from Tampa is that the Republican message was really pretty abstract. It was all about being anti-government and threats from the government and cutting taxes. The Democrats have put a whole lot of problems on the table that need to be solved and that they argue President Obama is working on. Schools, equal pay, investing in infrastructure, hunger, health care, and it goes on and on. And I think there is that contrast between here's what government can do versus we don't really like government much. It tells you a lot about the two parties. The other thing that's overwhelming tonight is the appeal to economic patriotism. As one of the tweeters said tonight, it's almost as if the Democrats have declared war on Switzerland and the Cayman Islands. I mean, the repeated references to Romney banking elsewhere, putting his money elsewhere, whereas Obama supported the auto industry. I think this economic patriotism is going to be a theme you're going to hear all during the fall. And I think that has real crossover appeal to more conservative voters.
All right, and we're going to dip back down into the podium now. In Charlotte, we're listening to Joaquin Castro. He's a member of the Texas House of Representatives running for Congress. He's introducing his identical twin brother, the keynote speaker tonight, Julian.
Julian Castro. I got a feeling that tonight's gonna be a good night. That tonight's gonna be a good night.
Julian Castro approaching the podium now. He is the mayor of San Antonio and a bright and shining face that many see him as having a long future in the Democratic Party, raised by a single mother.
Thank you.
Julian Castro, San Antonio's mayor.
Thank you. Thank you. My fellow Democrats, my fellow Americans, my fellow Texans, I stand before you tonight as a young American, a proud American, of a generation born as the Cold War receded, shaped by the tragedy of 9/11, connected by the digital revolution, and determined to reelect the man who will make the 21st century another American century, President Barack Obama. The unlikely journey that brought me here tonight began many miles from this podium. My brother Joaquin and I grew up with my mother, Rosie, and my grandmother, Victoria. My grandmother was an orphan. As a young girl, she had to leave her home in Mexico and move to San Antonio, where some relatives had agreed to take her in. She never made it past the fourth grade. She had to drop out and start working to help her family. My grandmother spent her whole life working as a maid, a cook, and a babysitter, barely scraping by, but still working hard to give my mother, her only child, a chance in life so that my mother could give my brother and me an even better one. As my grandmother got older, she begged my mother to give her grandchildren. She prayed to God for just one grandbaby before she died. You can imagine her excitement when she found out her prayers would be answered, twice over. She was so excited that the day before Joaquin and I were born, she entered a menudo cook-off, and she won $300. That's how she paid our hospital bill. By the time Joaquin and I came along, this incredible woman had taught herself to read and write in both Spanish and English. I can still see her in the room that Joaquin and I shared with her, reading her Agatha Christie novels late into the night. And I can still remember her every morning as Joaquin and I walked out the front door to school, making the sign of the cross behind us, saying, "Que Dios los bendiga." May God bless you. My grandmother didn't live to see us begin our lives in public service, but she probably would have thought it extraordinary that just two generations after she arrived in San Antonio, one grandson would be the mayor and the other would be on his way, the good people of San Antonio willing, to the United States Congress. My family's story isn't special. What's special is the America that makes our story possible. Ours is a nation like no other, a place where great journeys can be made in a single generation. No matter who you are or where you come from, the path is always forward. America didn't become the land of opportunity by accident. My grandmother's generation and generations before always saw beyond the horizons of their own lives and their own circumstances. They believed that opportunity created today would lead to prosperity tomorrow. That's the country they envisioned, and that's the country they helped build. The roads and bridges they built, the schools and universities they created, the rights they fought for and won, these opened the doors to a decent job, a secure retirement, the chance for your children to do better than you did. And that's the middle class, the engine of our economic growth. With hard work, everybody ought to be able to get there. And with hard work, everybody ought to be able to stay there and go beyond. The dream of raising a family in a place where hard work is rewarded is not unique to Americans. It's a human dream, one that calls across oceans and borders. The dream is universal, but America makes it possible, and our investment in opportunity makes it a reality. Now, in Texas, we believe in the rugged individual. Texas may be the one place where people actually still have bootstraps. And we expect folks to pull themselves up by them. But we also recognize that there are some things we can't do alone. We have to come together and invest in opportunity today for prosperity tomorrow.
We're listening to San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro.
And it starts with education. 20 years ago, Joaquin and I left home for college and then for law school. In those classrooms, we met some of the brightest folks in the world. But at the end of our days there, I couldn't help but to think back to my classmates at Thomas Jefferson High School, in San Antonio. They had the same talent, the same brains, the same dreams as the folks we sat with at Stanford and Harvard. I realized the difference wasn't one of intelligence or drive. The difference was opportunity. In my city of San Antonio, we get that. So we're working to ensure that more four-year-olds have access to pre-K. We opened Cafe College, where students get help with everything from college test prep to financial aid paperwork. We know that you can't be pro-business unless you're pro-education. We know that pre-K and student loans aren't charity. They're a smart investment in a workforce that can fill and create the jobs of tomorrow. We're investing in young minds today to be competitive in the global economy tomorrow. And it's paying off. Last year, the Milken Institute ranked San Antonio as the nation's top-performing local economy, and we're only getting started. Opportunity today, prosperity tomorrow. Now, like many of you, I watched last week's Republican convention, and they told a few stories of individual success. We all celebrate individual success, but the question is, how do we multiply that success? The answer is President Barack Obama. Mitt Romney, quite simply, doesn't get it. A few months ago, he visited a university in Ohio and gave students there a little entrepreneurial advice. Start a business, he said. But how? Borrow money if you have to from your parents, he told them. Gee, why didn't I think of that? Some people are lucky enough to borrow money from their parents. But that shouldn't determine whether you can pursue your dreams. Not in America, not here, not in the 21st century. I don't think Governor Romney meant any harm. I think he's a good guy. He just has no idea how good he's had it. We know that in our free market economy, some will prosper more than others. What we don't accept is the idea that some folks won't even get a chance. And the thing is, Mitt Romney and the Republican Party are perfectly comfortable with that America. In fact, that's exactly what they're promising us. The Romney-Ryan budget doesn't just cut public education, cut Medicare, cut transportation, and cut job training. It doesn't just pummel the middle class, it dismantles it. It dismantles what generations before have built to ensure that everybody can enter and stay in the middle class. When it comes to getting the middle class back to work, Mitt Romney says no. When it comes to respecting women's rights, Mitt Romney says no. When it comes to letting people love who they love and marry who they want to marry, Mitt Romney says no. When it comes to expanding access to good health care, Mitt Romney says
no.
Actually, Mitt Romney said yes, and now he says no. Governor Romney has undergone an extreme makeover, and it ain't pretty. So here's what we're going to say to Mitt Romney in November. We're going to say no. Of all the fictions we heard last week in Tampa, the one I find most troubling is this. If we all just go our own way, our nation will be stronger for it. Because if we sever the threads that connect us, the only people who will go far or those who are already ahead. We all understand that freedom isn't free. What Romney and Ryan don't understand is that neither is opportunity. We have to invest in it. Republicans tell us that if the most prosperous among us do even better, that somehow the rest of us will too. Folks, we've heard that before. First they called it trickle down, then they called it supply side, now it's Romney Ryan, or is it Ryan Romney? Either way, their theory's been tested. It failed. Our economy failed. The middle class paid the price. Your family paid the price. Mitt Romney just doesn't get it. But Barack Obama gets it. He understands that when we invest in people, we're investing in our shared prosperity. And when we neglect that responsibility, we risk our promise as a nation. Just a few years ago, families that had never asked for anything found themselves at risk of losing everything. And the dream my grandmother held, that work would be rewarded, that the middle class would be there, if not for her, then for her children, that dream was being crushed. But then President Obama took office and he took action. When Detroit was in trouble, President Obama saved the auto industry and saved a million jobs. Seven presidents before him, Republicans and Democrats, tried to expand health care to all Americans. President Obama got it done. He made a historic investment to lift our nation's public schools and expanded Pell Grants so that more young people can afford college. And because he knows that we don't have an ounce of talent to waste, the president took action to lift the shadow of deportation from a generation of young, law-abiding immigrants called Dreamers. Now it's time for Congress to enshrine in law their right to pursue their dreams in the only place they've ever called home, America. 4 years ago, America stood on the brink of a depression. Despite incredible odds and united Republican opposition, our president took action. And now we've seen 4.5 million new jobs. He knows better than anyone that there's more hard work to do, but we're making progress, and now we need to make a choice. It's a choice between a country where the middle class pays more so the millionaires can pay less, or a country where everybody pays their fair share so we can reduce the deficit and create the jobs of the future. It's a choice between a nation that slashes funding for our schools and guts Pell Grants, or a nation that invests more in education. And it's a choice between a politician who rewards companies that ship American jobs overseas, or a leader who brings jobs back home. This is the choice before us. And to me, to my generation, and for all the generations to come, our choice is clear. Our choice is a man who's always chosen us, a man who already is our president, Barack Obama. In the end, the American dream is not a sprint or even a marathon, but a relay. Our families don't always cross the finish line in the span of one generation, but each generation passes on to the next the fruits of their labor. My grandmother never owned a house. She cleaned other people's houses so she could afford to rent her own. but she saw her daughter become the first in her family to graduate from college. And my mother fought hard for civil rights so that instead of a mop, I could hold this microphone. And while she may be proud of me tonight, I gotta tell you, Mom, I'm even more proud of you. Thank you. Today, my beautiful wife, Erica, and I are the proud parents of a 3-year-old little girl, Karina Victoria, named after my grandmother. A couple of Mondays ago was her first day of pre-K, and as we dropped her off, we walked out of the classroom, and I found myself whispering to her, as was once whispered to me, Que Dios te bendiga. May God bless you. She's still young and her dreams are far off yet, but I hope she'll reach him. As a dad, I'm going to do my part, and I know she'll do hers. But our responsibility as a nation is to come together and do our part as one community, one United States of America, to ensure opportunity for all of our children. The days we live in are not easy ones, but we have seen days like this before, and America prevailed. With the wisdom of our founders and the values of our families, America prevailed. With each generation going further than the last, America prevailed. And with the opportunity we build today for a shared prosperity tomorrow, America will prevail. It begins with re-electing Barack Obama. It begins with you. It begins now. Que Dios los bendiga. May God bless you, and may God bless the United States of America.
San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro, the keynote speaker tonight, to a rousing audience there in Charlotte. He talked about the struggles of his grandmother and his single mother. He said opportunity today leads to prosperity tomorrow. And he claimed the Romney-Ryan budget would dismantle the middle class. He said the American dream is a relay from one generation to the next. NPR's Debbie Elliott is on the floor there with the Texas delegation. Hi, Debbie.
Hi, you can hear the excitement here. I'm standing next to State Senator Carlos Uresti. He is the representative there, the senator there from San Antonio, and this is a proud moment for you.
Very proud. I feel like a proud big brother of Mayor Julian Castro. I mean, he just knocked it out of the park. He did a wonderful job. Very proud of him.
Thank you. And now, Jennifer, it looks like we're already starting the video that's going to lead up to the highlight of this evening's performance, a speech from First Lady. So let's hear a little bit about the story that they're putting on now.
When the world is swirling around you and you're faced with tough challenges, if your family is good, you're good.
If any family in this country struggles, then we cannot be fully content with our own family's good fortune, because that is not what we do in this country. That is not who we are. That is not who we are.
This is a video about Michelle Obama coming up before her speech at the Democratic Convention.
Our house growing up was extremely modest. I remember our bedroom being formerly the living room that my parents had divided using paneling.
It basically carved the room out into two small rooms that were small enough for a twin bedroom and a desk. A special treat was that we could sleep out on the back porch when things got hot.
As far as where we lived, that just wasn't an issue. I was raised to have fun where we were with what we had, and it seemed like it was okay.
Neither one of our parents went to college. but with a lot of love, a lot of caring, we were afforded an opportunity to go to college.
We didn't say, you should be a lawyer or you should be a school teacher. It was, you should get an education.
We had to take out student loans in order to pay for those.
I know now how much my father had to work and struggle because he had to take out loans to cover his portion of our tuition.
He understood his responsibilities, that despite this hardship, despite his challenges, he was going to be there for his kids, always, no matter what.
My husband did not feel like MS was a battle. He would bounce out of bed and almost sing his way out of the door to work on crutches. And that would sort of wake me up. And I'm sure that did the same thing for the kids.
We did a lot of laughing in our household, and all of that happened in those few little rooms.
Michelle Obama now stepping into America's most traditional role, the full-time, non-paying, multidimensional job of First Lady.
Well, part of what makes her extraordinary is that she has been able to continue to be down to earth even as the First Lady. I mean, she's just Michelle.
Our friendship developed, I think, because we both have an interest in military families. When I met Michelle, she said, what do you think would be the issue that you're most interested in? And I said, military families.
And I said to Jill, I said, that's what I'd like to do. And that's where it all began.
We've done three tours. It's meant a lot to our family during some difficult times, just to know that there are folks in the White House rowing in the same direction with us.
Yeah. Whether it be helping homeless veterans through employment, trying to incorporate the military culture into the school systems, helping spouses find jobs, it's all come together.
She genuinely seems to care and want to know what military families are going through so that she can make changes on the national level.
You all don't even ask for much, you know? It's like, so we should be able to step up in whatever way we can.
Who's that?
1% of the country is serving to protect the freedoms of the other 99% of us. So my view is that there's a lot more that we can be doing for them to make that service and sacrifice a little easier.
Oh, she's so good with young people, and she sees herself in them. She treats the young children just the way she treats her own kids, and so they look at her as their mom because she is a mom.
It's a natural for me to see her getting the nation's kids out there exercising and moving around.
The best way to take care of yourself is to own your health, to eat better, exercise more.
It's about the whole child. It's about understanding how a child develops and how we can best put a child in a position to be successful.
And she wanted it to be fun, to come up with Let's Move. It has such a great name. You know, Let's Move is something we do together.
She is a strong woman. Physically, obviously, we all saw poor Jimmy Fallon.
We're listening to a video now about Michelle Obama and her work as First Lady.
I was just wondering if you could do more push-ups than I could do. And I thought it wouldn't be good to show off the First Lady, so I stopped.
I've seen a lead by example, a get right into it, a pull up your sleeves, hula hooping, jump roping First Lady. And I think that's what we need.
Hello, Mrs. Obama.
Hey, Dave.
And the number one fun fact about gardening.
With enough care and effort, you can grow your own broccoli.
Wow, look at this.
We went to our garden and we harvested some healthy food.
A lot of carrots.
Fruits.
She encouraged us to exercise more and to eat healthier.
You really are a wonderful woman.
I think you're the perfect wife for Obama.
Barack Obama, and this is my wife, Michelle.
Hey, I'm his date.
Family's everything. I think there's nothing more important to her than her children and her marriage and her mom and making sure that that all works well together.
She was very clear, mom in chief. I heard it. You heard it. She came in with a very clear, we're going to make sure our kids are okay.
I think every parent thinks their kids are fabulous and remarkable and special, and my kids are fabulous and remarkable and special. And the reason they are is because of Michelle. I always say that in our household, she's the conductor, and I'm second fiddle.
You know, Barack always gives me so much credit for who our girls have become, but let me tell you, our girls wouldn't be who they are without a man in their life who loved them deeply.
What I love about my wife more than anything is she knows what's important, and she knows that the best and most important legacy of anybody's life is making sure that your kids turn out all right. They have good values, they're kind, they're caring, and what's very gratifying to me is that I know the girls at this point are going to be fine because they've got the best mom in the world.
And that was a long salute to Michelle Obama, a video there in Charlotte, lauding her efforts working with military families and her anti-obesity efforts in the White House garden. We saw pictures of her doing jumping jacks with kids and heard the president call her the conductor of their household. At the podium now, Elaine Bry, a science teacher and military parent from Ohio, who will introduce Michelle Obama.
I'm not even a political person. But what I am is a military mom. My husband and I are so proud of our five kids, one each in the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, and the Marines. Our youngest is still in high school, and yes, we are hoping he will join the Coast Guard. They are a mom's most precious treasures. And I don't know when I'm going to get them together again, because one of them is always deploying. But because of Dr. Biden and the First Lady, our lives are a little bit easier. Along with President Obama, they have made helping military families a top priority. They've brought together the American people, including thousands of businesses, to become part of a nationwide support network. It is honor and respect in action, and it warms this mother's heart. Last December, I wrote Michelle Obama a Christmas card. Just a mom-to-mom note to say thank you for caring. The First Lady not only read my letter, she invited my husband and I to the White House. It was an amazing experience. But what's even more amazing is knowing that our Commander-in-Chief and First Lady are thinking about families like mine every single day. So, like I said, I'm not a political person, but I'm a mom. And if someone is there for my family and families like mine, then I'll be there for them. That's why I am so proud to introduce my fellow mom and our First Lady, Michelle Obama.
And that was Elaine Bry, a science teacher. And now here comes First Lady, Michelle Obama, the headline speaker tonight. We are told that President Obama is watching her on TV back home at the White House with his daughters. Michelle Obama is wearing a pink and gold dress and getting a rousing reception there in Charlotte. Here we go, Michelle Obama.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. With your help. Let me start. I want to start by thanking Elaine. Elaine, thank you so much. We are so grateful for your family's service and sacrifice, and we will always have your back. Over the past few years as First Lady, I have had the extraordinary privilege of traveling all across this country, and everywhere I've gone and the people I've met and the stories I've heard, I have seen the very best of the American spirit. I have seen it in the incredible kindness and warmth that people have shown me and my family, especially our girls. I've seen it in teachers in a near bankrupt school district who vowed to keep teaching without pay. I've seen it in people who become heroes at a moment's notice, diving into harm's way to save others, flying across the country to put out a fire, driving for hours to bail out a flooded town. And I've seen it in our men and women in uniform and our proud military families. In wounded warriors who tell me they're not just going to walk again, they're going to run, and they're going to run marathons. In the young man blinded by a bomb in Afghanistan who said simply, "I'd give my eyes 100 times again to have the chance to do what I have done and what I can still do." Every day, the people I meet inspire me. Every day, they make me proud. Every day, they remind me how blessed we are to live in the greatest nation on earth. Serving as your First Lady is an honor and a privilege. But back when we first came together 4 years ago, I still had some concerns about this journey we'd begun. While I believed deeply in my husband's vision for this country, and I was certain he would make an extraordinary president, like any mother, I was worried about what it would mean for our girls if he got that chance. Now, how will we keep them grounded under the glare of the national spotlight? How would they feel being uprooted from their school, their friends, and the only home they'd ever known? See, our life before moving to Washington was filled with simple joys. Saturdays at soccer games, Sundays at Grandma's house, and a date night for Barack and me was either dinner or movie, because as an exhausted mom, I couldn't stay awake for both. And the truth is, I loved the life we had built for our girls, and I deeply loved the man I had built that life with, and I didn't want that to change if he became president. I loved Barack just the way he was. You see, even back then, when Barack was a senator and a presidential candidate, to me, he was still the guy who picked me up for our dates in a car that was so rusted out. I could actually see the pavement going by in a hole in the passenger side door. He was the guy whose proudest possession was a coffee table he'd found in a dumpster, and whose only pair of decent shoes was a half size too small. But see, when Barack started telling me about his family, see, now that's when I knew I had found a kindred spirit, someone whose values and upbringing were so much like mine. You see, Barack and I were both raised by families who didn't have much in the way of money or material possessions, but who had given us something far more valuable: their unconditional love, their unflinching sacrifice, and the chance to go places they had never imagined for themselves. My father was a pump operator at the city water plant. and he was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis when my brother and I were young. And even as a kid, I knew there were plenty of days when he was in pain. And I knew there were plenty of mornings when it was a struggle for him to simply get out of bed. But every morning, I watched my father wake up with a smile, grab his walker, prop himself up against the bathroom sink, and slowly shave and button his uniform. And when he returned home after a long day's work, my brother and I would stand at the top of the stairs of our little apartment, patiently waiting to greet him, watching as he reached down to lift one leg and then the other to slowly climb his way into our arms. But despite these challenges, my dad hardly ever missed a day of work. He and my mom were determined to give me and my brother the kind of education they could only dream of. And when my brother and I finally made it to college, nearly all of our tuition came from student loans and grants, but my dad still had to pay a tiny portion of that tuition himself. And every semester, he was determined to pay that bill right on time, even taking out loans when he fell short. He was so proud to be sending his kids to college, and he made sure we never missed a registration deadline because his check was late. You see, for my dad, that's what it meant to be a man. Like so many of us. That was the measure of his success in life, being able to earn a decent living that allowed him to support his family. And as I got to know Barack, I realized that even though he had grown up all the way across the country, he'd been brought up just like me. Barack was raised by a single mom who struggled to pay the bills and by grandparents who stepped in when she needed help. Barack's grandmother started out as a secretary at a community bank, and she moved quickly up the ranks, but like so many women, she hit a glass ceiling. And for years, men no more qualified than she was, men she had actually trained, were promoted up the ladder ahead of her, earning more and more money while Barack's family continued to scrape by. But day after day, she kept on waking up at dawn to catch the bus, arriving at work before anyone else, giving her best without complaint or regret. And she would often tell Barack, "So long as you kids do well, Bear, that's all that really matters." Like so many American families, our families weren't asking for much. They didn't begrudge anyone else's success or care that others had much more than they did. In fact, they admired it. They simply believed in that fundamental American promise that even if you don't start out with much, if you work hard and do what you're supposed to do, you should be able to build a decent life for yourself and an even better life for your kids and grandkids. That's how they raised us.
This is NPR's special coverage, the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina. At the podium, First Lady Michelle Obama.
From their example, we learned about dignity and decency, that how hard you work matters more than how much you make, that helping others means more than just getting ahead yourself. We learned about honesty and integrity, that the truth matters, that you don't take shortcuts or play by your own set of rules. And success doesn't count unless you earn it fair and square. We learned about gratitude and humility, that so many people had a hand in our success, from the teachers who inspired us to the janitors who kept our school clean. And we were taught to value everyone's contribution and treat everyone with respect. Those are the values that Barack and I and so many of you are trying to pass on to our own children. That's who we are. And standing before you 4 years ago, I knew that I didn't want any of that to change if Barack became president. Well, today, after so many struggles and triumphs and moments that have tested my husband in ways I never could have imagined. I have seen firsthand that being president doesn't change who you are. No, it reveals who you are. You see, I've gotten to see up close and personal what being president really looks like. And I've seen how the issues that come across a president's desk are always the hard ones. You know, the problems where no amount of data or numbers will get you to the right answer. The judgment calls where the stakes are so high and there is no margin for error. And as president, you're going to get all kinds of advice from all kinds of people. But at the end of the day, when it comes time to make that decision as president, all you have to guide you are your values and your vision and the life experiences that make you who you are. So when it comes to rebuilding our economy, Barack is thinking about folks like my dad and like his grandmother. He's thinking about the pride that comes from a hard day's work. That's why he signed the Lilly Ledbetter Fair Pay Act, to help women get equal pay for equal work. That's why he cut taxes for working families and small businesses and fought to get the auto industry back on its feet. That's how he brought our economy from the brink of collapse to creating jobs again, jobs you can raise a family on, good jobs, right here in the United States of America. When it comes to the health of our families, Barack refused to listen to all those folks who told him to leave health reform for another day, another president. He didn't care whether it was the easy thing to do politically. No, that's not how he was raised. He cared that it was the right thing to do. He did it because he believes that here in America, our grandparents should be able to afford their medicine. Our kids should be able to see a doctor when they're sick. And no one in this country should ever go broke because of an accident or an illness. And he believes that women are more than capable of making our own choices about our bodies and our health care. That's what my husband stands for. When it comes to giving our kids the education they deserve, Barack knows that, like me and like so many of you, he never could have attended college without financial aid. And believe it or not, when we were first married, our combined monthly student loan bill was actually higher than our mortgage. Yeah, we were so young, so in love, and so in debt. And that's why Barack has fought so hard to increase student aid and keep interest rates down, because he wants every young person to fulfill their promise and be able to attend college without a mountain of debt. So in the end, for Barack, these issues aren't political. They're personal. Because Barack knows what it means when a family struggles. He knows what it means to want something more for your kids and grandkids. Barack knows the American dream because he's lived it. And he wants everyone in this country, everyone, to have the same opportunity, no matter who we are or where we're from or what we look like or who we love. And he believes that when you've worked hard and done well and walked through that doorway of opportunity, you do not slam it shut behind you. No, you reach back and you give other folks the same chances that help you succeed. So when people ask me whether being in the White House has changed my husband, I can honestly say that when it comes to his character and his convictions and his heart, Barack Obama is still the same man I fell in love with all those years ago. Yeah. He's the same man who started his career by turning down high-paying jobs and instead working in struggling neighborhoods where a steel plant shut down, fighting to rebuild those communities and get folks back to work. Because for Barack, success isn't about how much money you make. It's about the difference you make in people's lives. He's the same man when our girls were first born, would anxiously check their cribs every few minutes to ensure that they were still breathing, proudly showing them off to everyone we knew. You see, that's the man who sits down with me and our girls for dinner nearly every night, patiently answering questions about issues in the news, strategizing about middle school friendships. That's the man I see in those quiet moments late at night, hunched over his desk, poring over the letters people have sent him. The letter from the father struggling to pay his bills, from the woman dying of cancer whose insurance company won't cover her care, from the young people with so much promise but so few opportunities. And I see the concern in his eyes. And I hear the determination in his voice as he tells me, "You won't believe what these folks are going through, Michelle. It's not right. We've got to keep working to fix this. We've got so much more to do." I see how those stories our collection of struggles and hopes and dreams, I see how that's what drives Barack Obama every single day. And I didn't think that it was possible, but let me tell you, today I love my husband even more than I did 4 years ago, even more than I did 23 years ago when we first met. Let me tell you why. See, I love that he has never forgotten how he started. I love that we can trust Barack to do what he says he's going to do, even when it's hard, especially when it's hard. Yeah, I love that for Barack, there is no such thing as us and them. He doesn't care whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, or none of the above. He knows that we all love our country, and he is always ready to listen to good idea. He's always looking for the very best in everyone he meets. And I love that even in the toughest moments, when we're all sweating it, when we're worried that the bill won't pass and it seems like all is lost. See, Barack never lets himself get distracted by the chatter and the noise. No, just like his grandmother, he just keeps getting up and moving forward with patience and wisdom and courage and grace.
This is special coverage of the Democratic National Convention from NPR News.
And he reminds me that we are playing a long game here, and that change is hard, and change is slow, and it never happens all at once, but eventually we get there. We always do. We get there because of folks like my dad, folks like Barack's grandmother, men and women who said to themselves, "I may not have a chance to fulfill my dreams, but maybe my children will. Maybe my grandchildren will." See, so many of us stand here tonight because of their sacrifice and longing and steadfast love, because time and again they swallowed their fears and doubts and did what was hard. So today, when the challenges we face start to seem overwhelming or even impossible, let us never forget that doing the impossible is the history of this nation. It is who we are as Americans. It is how this country was built. And if our parents and grandparents could toil and struggle for us, you know, if they could raise beams of steel to the sky, send a man to the moon, connect the world with the touch of a button, then surely we can keep on sacrificing and building for our own kids and grandkids, right? And if so many brave men and women could wear our country's uniform and sacrifice their lives for our most fundamental rights, then surely we can do our part as citizens of this great democracy to exercise those rights. Surely we can get to the polls on Election Day and make our voices heard. If farmers and blacksmiths could win independence from an empire, if immigrants could leave behind everything they knew for a better life on our shores, if women could be dragged to jail for seeking the vote, if a generation could defeat a depression and define greatness for all time, if a young preacher could lift us to the mountaintop with his righteous dream, and if proud Americans can be who they are and boldly stand at the altar with who they love, then surely, surely, we can give everyone in this country a fair chance at that great American dream. Because in the end, more than anything else, that is the story of this country, the story of unwavering hope grounded in unyielding struggle. That is what has made my story and Barack's story and so many other American stories possible. And let me tell you something, I say all of this tonight, not just as First Lady, no, not just as a wife. You see, at the end of the day, my most important title is still Mom in Chief. My daughters are still the heart of my heart and the center of my world. But let me tell you, today I have none of those worries from 4 years ago, no. Not about whether Barack and I were doing what was best for our girls. Because today, I know from experience that if I truly want to leave a better world for my daughters and for all of our sons and daughters, if we want to give all of our children a foundation for their dreams and opportunities worthy of their promise, If we want to give them that sense of limitless possibility, that belief that here in America, there is always something better out there if you're willing to work for it, then we must work like never before. And we must once again come together and stand together for the man we can trust to keep moving this great country forward. My husband, our president, Barack Obama. Thank you. God bless you. God bless America.
And that was First Lady Michelle Obama bringing the crowd in Charlotte to their feet, giving an impassioned defense of her husband, who she calls the man we can trust. She described how poor Barack Obama was when they started dating, how they shared values of gratitude and humility. She said being president doesn't change who you are, it reveals who you are. And she said Barack Obama knows the American dream because he has lived it. There were crowds of "We love you, Michelle, four more years," and people waving signs, "We love you, Michelle," as well. Final thoughts now with our analyst. NPR's Mara Liasson is with us. And Mara, what's your takeaway from her speech?
I thought it was a really powerful, extremely personal speech. She did exactly what we were told she would. She talked about Barack Obama's values and motivations. She related it to her family, his family growing up, their family with their girls. There wasn't any swipes at Mitt Romney. She kept above the fray in that sense. And she really did ground the argument for a second term in basic American values: honesty and integrity, dignity and decency, working hard, giving other people a chance, helping other people, respecting everyone. And I thought it was a really powerful speech. I think she's gotten a lot better in 4 years. You can really see how she's grown into the role. She's become a really eloquent and powerful public speaker. The message was Barack knows what it means when a family struggles. He knows the American dream because he's lived it, and he can give it to you. I think that the contrast with Mitt Romney was implicit, not explicit, but it was well argued.
Matt Consonanti, as you said earlier, she changed the tone of the evening.
Yes, she did. It was a fantastic speech. Who would have thought that the first mention of the 1% would have come from Michelle Obama, and she would be referring to the 1% of Americans who defend our country? I thought she was responded very well to the opening that Mitt Romney presented when he did not mention the conflict in Afghanistan in his acceptance speech last week. You know, there was an appeal toward the end of the speech where it was twofold. One, she said often, "He's the same man that I knew." Obviously, she's known him for 23 years, but also that we elected 4 years ago. I think that's an appeal to those disillusioned Obama voters, to remind them he is the same guy. You may not like some of the things he's done, but you trusted in them. You should trust him now. The second thing she did was she made an appeal again to get out and talk to people, get out and vote. And I think that speaks to a real fear among the Obama campaign that the voters who turned out for them in 2008 are not going to show up in 2012.
EJ Dion, your impressions?
Well, you know, Mara was absolutely right when she said that Michelle Obama never mentioned Mitt Romney, never said a cross word, and yet the speech was a devastating contrast between the struggles of the Obama family over generations, her dad and his job despite the MS, what the difficulty they had in paying their student loans, a devastating contrast between what they went through and Romney's privilege. And I was really struck with how she linked an old-fashioned work ethic, which she went back to again and again and again, and old-fashioned parental values with a call for social justice and the idea that we needed some help along the way, student loans, and the like. And there were other sort of non-zingers, like the success, that success doesn't count unless you're willing to earn it fair and square. People can interpret that the way they want. The crowd loved it when she said, and we learned that the truth matters. And of course, the crowd heard that as a critique of the way the Republicans are running their campaign. But again, it worked so well because it was entirely subtle, without any direct zingers. Other last point is, there was a neat link between what she said and what Mayor Castro said in his speech. The line I liked best in the keynote was, "In the end, the American dream is not a sprint or even a marathon, but a relay. Our families don't always cross the finish line in the span of one generation, but each generation passes on to the next the fruits of their labor." We have seen two pictures of what the American dream is at two conventions.
All right. Ron Elving, a quick impression, and then we're going to go down to the floor.
Jennifer, it was a speech that had a great deal of power because it had a great deal of passion. A week ago, we saw Ann Romney praising her husband, and it was the great feeling that she had in that speech that made that effective. You know, over the last 20 years, it seems to have become necessary, if you're going to be a presidential nominee with any hope of winning, to have a fabulous speaker as your spouse. You're going to have a co-presenter as well as a mom-in-chief. And that mom-in-chief at the end was another reference back to the traditional roles of women, which she did periodically throughout the speech, very effectively weaving that in with the modernity of her role.
All right, we're going to... what about Julian Castro? Before Michelle Obama, we had the keynote speech tonight from the San Antonio mayor, who, quite a different tone, but roused the auditorium there as well. Mara?
Well, yeah, I thought, everybody was texting me while I was listening to it. A Star is Born. I think he really gave a great speech. This was his debut on the national stage. Very few people have heard of him, know who he is. He's 37 years old. He had a very powerful immigrant story. But he talked about how in Texas we believe in the rugged individual, but we know that some things you can't do alone. We have to come together and invest in opportunity. He talked about Mitt Romney doesn't know how good he's had it. And how in our free market economy some will prosper more than others. What we don't accept is the idea that some folks won't even get a chance, and that is the vision that Mitt Romney's offering us. I thought it was a really powerful speech. I think he comes out of this convention kind of the next generation of Democratic leaders. And he's often been called the Hispanic Barack Obama. That was a very, very high bar for him. But giving a keynote speech with the memories of Barack Obama's 2004 speech, I thought he did really well.
All right, let's dip down to the floor now. NPR's Sonari Glinton is with the Illinois delegation. You'll hear their reaction.
Hey, I'm with one of the patrons of the president's career, Tony Preckwinkle, who has known him for about 20 years and helped him to get into politics. What do you think of this evening?
Well, I've always thought that Michelle was a smart and talented woman, and I thought she gave a great speech tonight.
What was the highlight for you of this evening?
Of this evening? I think her speech and the speech of the young man from the mayor of San Antonio, those were my favorites, I think, although I thought Bob Strickland gave a good speech as well, and, of course, the mayor of the city of Chicago.
What do you think is down the road? What do you think that the challenge is for the president?
Oh, this is going to be a tough race. My understanding is that the race comes down to very few undecideds and a few swing states. So, that's a real challenge. It means that the Democrats have decided where they're going to win, and the Republicans have decided where they're going to win, and the few states in the middle are where all the action is. So, that in a way, that's discouraging to me as somebody who is really committed to democracy. On the other hand, it's where we are.
Well, thank you so much, President Practical. I appreciate you taking time to talk to us. Back to you, Jennifer.
Sonari, thank you so much. NPR's Debbie Elliott is on the floor. I believe you're with the Alabama delegation. Is that right, Debbie?
I am. I was standing here with Senator Vivian Davis Figure. She is from Mobile. She is the incoming Senate minority leader in Alabama. She'll be the first woman to hold that post. And I must say she looked a little bit weepy as she was recording the First Lady's speech. What was going through your mind?
Just how passionate, how compassionate and loving that our First Lady is. And I felt so good. I felt so reassured that this country is in much, much better hands of the Obamas, if you will, because they have a deep understanding of family, of children, and what we need to prosper.
When she talked about being mom in chief, a cheer went up in this section.
I love that because I can understand that having three sons, becoming a single mom, 16 years ago this month when my husband suddenly died, I know what happens with a single parent. Just hearing her talk about how every child needed that opportunity. They just wanted the opportunity. And how here in America, all of us should be able to acquire that and achieve that American dream. I can relate to her and Barack's families, with Barack's mom being a single mom and myself becoming a single mom, a widow. I can relate to her family with my mom and dad and how neither one of my parents were educated. and how my father worked at the railroad for 35 years and never missed a day and would go to work while he was sick, but to provide for his family, it was important. So they understand. And when you can understand and relate to the people you're representing, you definitely do a much better job. So I was just, I think she's awesome.
Thank you so much, Senator Figures. Senator Vivian Davis Figures of Alabama, a state senator representing Mobile. Jennifer, as you hear there, the message that First Lady Michelle Obama had was something that hit home for a lot of women in this audience, and particularly the story of struggling to come up for generations. And I know that the Democratic Party certainly must be hoping that that's going to work, that that's going to bring in some independent voters who might be sitting on the fence who are hearing a personal message tonight, something that they might be able to relate to on a very human level.
All right, NPR's Debbie Elliott, thank you so much. Okay, a fast, quick round, final thoughts here. Mara, it strikes me there was also an attempt to put a personal face on health care with some personal stories tonight. Do you think that might do anything?
Yeah, I think the Democrats tried to find ordinary Americans to talk about how the policies of Barack Obama have helped them. Stacey Lynn talked about how the Affordable Care Act has allowed her daughter to have several open heart surgeries that she couldn't have afforded otherwise because she would have hit the lifetime limits of her insurance policy. You had a woman from Texas who described herself as a stay-at-home mom, a former Republican who is switching parties because of the Republicans' positions on abortion. There were people who Lilly Ledbetter, of course, for whom the law, the Lilly Ledbetter Act, is named after. She gave a really rousing description of her fight for equal pay and how Barack Obama finally signed legislation to make sure other people don't suffer the same thing,
all right,
other women in the workplace. So I think that was effective.
Matt Continetti, what struck you?
I think if Obama ends up winning, it's not going to be because of Lilly Ledbetter or because of his position on abortion. It's going to go back to the word we heard a lot from the delegate and other guests, which is relate. I think the Obamas tell a story that makes it a lot easier for people of all backgrounds to relate to than perhaps the Romneys have done so far. And I think that might be a decisive factor.
Ron Elving?
The Democrats hit their notes tonight. They wanted to go after women. They went after women. Boy, big time. Michelle Obama obviously capping that off. They also wanted to go after Hispanics and reclaim that vote after the bid from the Republicans last week. The Republicans had Marco Rubio. Democrats said, we'll see your Marco Rubio and raise you two Castros, Joaquin and Julian. And they were fantastic. Julian in particular was a real revelation. That is a speaker.
All right, and we have got to leave it there, but we will be back tomorrow. NPR's Ron Elving, Mara Liasson, Matt Continetti of the Washington Free Beacon, and E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post and Brookings. The night ended with a passionate speech from First Lady Michelle Obama. She said, I love that he has never forgotten how he started. We also had a keynote address from San Antonio Mayor Julian Castro, the story of another politician raised by a single mother who went on to Harvard. The Democrats will do it again tomorrow. The marquee name will be former President Bill Clinton, expected to make an argument that the economy is better than it was 4 years ago. We will be here with live coverage of the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte, North Carolina. This is special coverage from NPR News.